peace. Our animal friends are on the run, but there's nowhere to go when the job is done. How can we stand by while this all takes place? We've got to stop this inhuman race. Compromise, no compromise, no compromise in defense of Mother Earth. Strip mining mountains by the ton, digging up the uranium. Baldy, you're looking for a place to land. It's all gone for nuclear plans. Must we poison the water, earth, and air just to cook a piece of toast or blow dry our hair? No compromise, no compromise, no compromise, no compromise, no compromise in defense of Mother Earth. Don't we know there's gonna come a time when the tables will be turned? What will we say to answer for these crimes and for our lessons never learned? All native species of the earth, the land is yours by right of birth. But the corporations can't stand to see way that we were meant to be. Our sisters and brothers are dying every day while we drink our coffee and look the other way. No compromise, no compromise, no compromise, no compromise, no compromise in defense of Mother mistakes. The answer is whatever it takes. Now the pen is mightier than the sword, but a monkey wrench can do a whole lot more. The revolution is just around the bend. Will Mother Earth be your foe or your friend? No compromise, no compromise in defense of Mother Earth. Her first, her first, her first, her first. No compromise in defense of Mother Earth. Her
And that was Daryl Cherney from his 1980s album, Timber. Of course, Earth First. And, hey, I too sympathize with what they're doing, and I think that the No Compromise motto is a good one for us here in Santa Cruz who are struggling to regain civil rights for the entire community, not just those with money, not just those who have businesses downtown, not just those who have political connections, not just those who are on the Gingrich side of the ledger. Though in Santa Cruz, of course, Gingrich is a nasty word. We have respectable progressives like Scott Kennedy on our council backing laws that make it criminal to ask for a dime after dark. We have liberals like Neil Coonerty, who runs the Bookshop Santa Cruz, previously mayor and previously on the city council, backing laws that make it illegal to sit down on the sidewalk asking for permits for panhandling, making sure that there aren't demonstrations in front of his store in terms of tabling. So it's a strange kind of liberal community here in Santa Cruz, which is liberal abroad, so to speak, liberal towards issues in Washington, liberal towards international issues, but locally is redneck city as far as basic rights for poor people, for instance, the long-ignored and still vital right to sleep at night, which has been a constant theme of this show. This show is Bathrob Spear's Broadsides, and you are listening to Bathrob Spear Robert Norse on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. It looks like, before we're even beginning, we have a caller, so we're going to give a little airtime to this phone.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Good morning, Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Good morning, Free Radio Santa Cruz. And who's calling in now?
Well, this is CM here.
Hi, CM, you mysterious thing, you. What good news do you have for our listeners this morning?
Actually, maybe you could call me later.
Oh, this is a personal call.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much, Sam. I will get back to you.
Great show.
Oh, thanks.
By the way.
All right.
If I have anything to add to it, I'll call again.
All right. Do so. The show, of course, has been going all of 2.5 minutes, so I want to thank you for your vote of confidence here. Thanks, Sam. I'll get back to you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that is the mysterious CM, and hey, that's between me and the telephone. But you're tuned to 96.3 FM, as I was saying before, Free Radio Santa Cruz, and the rather belabored, cold-ridden voice of Bathrob Spear Robert here. This is Broadsides, your show to discuss civil rights for the poor in Santa Cruz, and also San Francisco and the Bay Area, since our show is heard up there. We do a lot of focus on the local issues of the River Street refugees, the need for an emergency campground, the shenanigans around city council nonsense, and the corruption, malfeasance, and repression that recently has become more intense, particularly the repression in the emergency service provider here in town for homeless services, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, as they like to call themselves, CCH. Indeed, we have a number of interviews. We have an interview with Becky Johnson, who's on the board of CCH, along with Housing Now! Activist Linda LeMaster and myself discussing the results of the latest board meeting of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless last week. This, as most of our listeners know, is the group that closed the only homeless campground in the country and the only legal place for people to sleep outside in Santa Cruz last December in violation of a verbal recorded legal promise made to the campers of the Coral Street Open Air Shelter. And as a consequence, homeless people have had no outdoor shelter all winter. And indeed, a small band of them, the River Street Refugees, has been roaming from state park to state park and is currently perched at Cowell State Park. And we're going to have an interview from some days back with Michael Sheridan, Rolling Thunder Mike, who I believe was in the studio more recently. So this may be a sort of an exercise in archivism rather than the current news, but he's often most articulate on issues, so I'd like to have him present. We've also invited Barbara Riverwoman of Save Our Shelter to call in. Save Our Shelter is having its first meeting in months, by the way, all you meeting lovers, at 7 o'clock in the room 23, I believe it is, perhaps room 22. In any case, check both rooms of the Veterans Hall, 7 o'clock Wednesday, February 28th. That's day after tomorrow. And this organization, again, is seeking to put pressure on city council and the county and other service providers to facilitate an emergency campground so that on March 15th, when the Winter Armory shelter opens up or closes down, I should say, the doors open up and the doors shut down, there will be a place for people to sleep at night outside without being arrested. As you know, Santa Cruz has the notorious sleeping ban, which makes it illegal to sleep anywhere outside, in a vehicle, in any building, in fact, quote, not intended for human habitation, which includes restaurants, libraries, public offices, garages. It's also illegal to sleep on much private property, even with the permission of the owner. The exceptions to that are you can sleep in a backyard, you can sleep in a fenced-in side yard, you can sleep in a church parking lot in a vehicle if you are in the under the auspices of the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program. However, the ISSP, again run by the infamous Citizens Committee for the Homeless, has no appeal process if they kick you out. At least we haven't been able to find it. And so the Director Paul Merceau, whom I call, pardonnez-moi, Paul, has yet to respond to a complaint made about an eviction from that program in October by a woman named Gina. And continued calls to Paul elicit no response. Paul's last response to me was a letter threatening me with trespass if I showed up at the Citizens Committee for the Homeless board meeting. He handed me that letter and indeed called the police twice to make sure that I did not sit quietly in the meeting listening to the proceedings and taping them for the benefit of homeless people and others who could not be present. So Paul is doing good work for, I don't know, what is it, $28,000 a year or some such thing for the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, but he's not working for the homeless. He's working for the Citizens Committee. Let's make that real clear, in case it's not clear already. And so the question then is, what do we do about the sleeping ban? What's going to happen on March 15th when the Winter Armory closes down and we have another 100 people without shelter? Everybody is without shelter, in fact, except, I guess, for 56 people who can go into the continuing scaled-down Interfaith Satellite Church program, which takes people to the floors of churches every night in the North County. This is the question that really confronts us. Various individuals are dealing with it, including River Street refugees, Mike Sheridan. Sam was in the studio. Sam's with Sheridan, and of course there are others up there at the River Street refugees, and I invite them to call in. I invite people from the Homeless Community Resource Center to call in if you're listening to this show. I invite, hey, anybody in the Santa Cruz community who's interested in these issues and can add any kind of enlightenment, can give us some questions that need answering, pose some questions, give a call to 427-3772, and you'll get to speak your piece on the air, and hopefully we'll get to hear other voices than this rather cold, scarred voice that I have, although it's interesting. I call people on the phone, and nobody recognizes me, so perhaps I should be happy, and maybe I can get into areas I have not been able to get into before because my voice has been familiar. Indeed, we may try to give a call to Citizens Committee for the Homeless today to find out, indeed, if they've yet gotten an appeal procedure for those kicked out of their ISSP shelter program, which is a serious thing. If you're kicked out, you don't got no place to stay legally in this entire city area. So it certainly is an issue that should be answered. I've actually written a lengthy letter to the board of directors on that issue and the issue of my own banning from the meetings of Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which take place not only once a month, that's the board meeting, which does happen once a month, every fourth Thursday at the Garfield Park Church at, I guess the address is Woodrow and California. But there are also weekly meetings happening about the Community House Project. Community House, for those of you who don't know, and I don't think there are probably too many who are listening to this show, but Community House is the 10-trailer, million-dollar project which is being used to destroy the campground area, which is being placed right on top of the area that for 2 years has housed between 100 and 300 homeless people who lived in tents quite successfully during that period as emergency shelter, coming and going, were able to seek jobs, were able to live their lives, were able to get a sort of a modicum of security in a very limited way, who formed their own community there. That entire thing was destroyed by the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which instead is touting its million-dollar community house project and running from one city council meeting to another, panhandling for tens of thousands, indeed hundreds of thousands of dollars. And the next such panhandling activity is going to happen tomorrow. For all you folks who oppose corporate panhandling, you should move your butts down to, let's put it this way, get your eyes focused on what's going on at the City Manager's Conference Rooms, which is right at City Hall, which is across from the main library and the Civic Auditorium downtown. That's 8:15 tomorrow morning. Mike Rotkin, Mayor Mike, the man who deported the homeless from the Coral Street Open Air Shelter to New Brighton Beach and told the rest of the people to either get into the armory or get out of town or hide out or face the sleeping ban, in essence. That's Mayor Mike. He's going to be heading the hearings that will be giving away $47,000 to the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. That's tomorrow, 8:15 in the morning at City Hall. So I invite anyone who's interested to show up there and speak your piece to the mayor. I suggest you tell them that the money should not go to CCH. The money should go to organizations like SOS, Save Our Shelter, maybe HCRC, the Homeless Community Resource Center, which one hopes may have the possibility of taking over a campground and running a campground this summer if a site can be found. And frankly, I would like to see this community house project held up indefinitely until the real crisis of emergency shelter is dealt with by the city, the county, and the monopoly service provider in that county on emergency shelter, namely CCH, Citizens Committee for the Homeless, the people that own the property right next to the free meal and the Homeless Community Resource Center, the property which is known as the Back 40, the Coral Street area, the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, which is the most obvious place for emergency shelter until such time as a more decent location can be found, because it's so conveniently located next to homeless services, because it's available, easily accessible, and because it's been successful. It's true that there have been allegations and indeed the reality of drug use and alcohol use in that area, but that is a reality throughout the homeless community. It's not something you're going to get rid of by the stroke of a pen. Instead, it becomes more dangerous when it's done in isolation in different areas, like under bridges. People fall off those bridges and die, as has happened at least twice in the last 4 years when they were drunk. People have overdoses and die, as happens, for example, as happened last December in the Coral Street Open Air Shelter. Once a panic was created by Paul Merceau and Scott Kennedy because they were closing the campground in violation of the promises made to the campers. So I'd like to see people show up tomorrow at this hearing at 8:15, at the essentially right next to the mayor's office downtown, to tell the mayor that it's time to put the money into a project which will actually be of maximum benefit to the people, the homeless people, for whom that money should be intended. And you can do that tomorrow morning at 8:15. At 9 o'clock, there'll be a curfew hearing at the actually not even a hearing, a curfew vote at the Board of Supervisors, which is across the river in the fifth floor of the county building. That's pretty much a done deal, although it's possible the curfew may be pulled from the agenda, the consent agenda, so it can be further discussed. But the three votes to make it illegal to tarry after 11 o'clock at night if you're under age 18, or if you look under 18 and can't prove how old you are, is likely a done deal. At noon, there's going to be a meeting of the Citizens Police Review Board. That's on Tuesday, tomorrow. And they're going to be talking to, we hope, if he will show up, Police Chief, Santa Cruz City Police Chief, Steve Belcher, who, as I said, seems to have been hiding the complaints, or at least has not been reporting the complaints, or there's been a peculiar situation with respect to the complaints this summer that should have been recorded as complaints but weren't. And so in an attempt to deal with this, Steve has changed the rules regarding how you report complaints, and the Citizens Police Review Board is trying to challenge that and make some suggestions, but we don't think the police department's going to listen, and you might want to check out whether they do or don't and tell the police department they should pay attention to the voice of the people, pay attention to the people they're supposed to be serving, and that they are paid to serve. That's at noon, and that's on the second floor of the library, for those of you who want to attend that hearing. It's Tuesday, tomorrow, February 27th. And finally, and I think closest to my heart and most important, and I'm going to be hoping that the man who precipitated this will be calling in, there's going to be a hearing tonight, an appeal hearing, on the appeal of Daniel Hopkins, or Dragon's Heart Dan, as I call him. Dan is a camper. He's a member, was at the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, went with the River Street Refugees, and has been a part of SOS, Save Our Shelter. He's also a member of HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and he has single-handedly challenged the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, the campground killers, to justify their community house 10-trailer project. And in order to do that, he rounded up $50 going from person to person, panhandling, not for tens of thousands, not for hundreds of thousands, as CCH has done over the years, but simply for enough to bring this issue to the public awareness, to bring this issue back to City Council for discussion. And it's going to be brought back to City Council for discussion tomorrow night. And my understanding is it's going to be the last item on the agenda. But I'm going to double-check that. I have not yet contacted the city clerk for the final disposition. I heard a kind of preliminary disposition last week when I talked to the city clerk's office, and they told me it would be the last item on the agenda, but they hadn't yet made the evening agenda for City Council. And City Council, as most everybody knows, meets in City Hall every second and fourth Tuesdays. This is the fourth Tuesday of February. It'll be meeting tomorrow night, starting at 7 o'clock. You can show up at 7 and speak during the so-called oral communications period about any issue that concerns you for 3 minutes. And Mike Rotkin has been not terribly generous, but he hasn't been his usual harsh RoboCop self, as he was some years ago, in suggesting that people be arrested if they mention City Council members' names at oral communications. A rather outrageous move on his part, which I think he has seen the wisdom of ending. So you can come in at 7 o'clock tomorrow night. You can talk to the public, which, by the way, goes out on television. So it's seen not merely by the 50 to 100 people or less who are in the audience and by the 7 city council members who are usually shuffling their papers and doing something else, but it's also seen by the Santa Cruz public, and it's also kept as a video record. So if you want to speak to the city council about issues that are important, ranging from harassment downtown to concerns about low-income housing that are unmet, to racial discrimination, to misplaced priorities in terms of funding for homeless projects, to police chief abuses around Citizens Police Review, environmental concerns that Earth First is concerned with, anything you want. You can talk for 3 minutes, City Council, tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, City Hall. And I encourage you to do so because you're not talking to the council, who frequently couldn't care less. You're talking to the public, and you may give hope to some people in the public and encourage them to speak out, or even more importantly, to get together and organize for real change independently of the decrepit, otiose, archaic system that essentially provides for little meaningful input in our city government. At least on homeless issues, that's what I've found. And then later that night, last item on the agenda, you'll be able to support Daniel Hopkins as he appeals the Community House Project permit. Again, this is the project that displaces the only legal campground, the only legal place to sleep, the much-needed open-air shelter area that is being destroyed for this fund magnet, this money sinkhole, this community house project. And I'm going to be playing you an interview, if I can find it, between several activists who met yesterday to discuss this issue. Actually, I have not yet been able to find that interview. I'm hoping that Becky Johnson possibly will call in. She was at the Citizens Committee for the Homeless meeting discussing this. Indeed, the only person on the board, as far as I'm concerned, who has any awareness of the issues involved or is not in denial on the question of, well, the reality that the Citizens Committee is sending hundreds of homeless people off under the bridges into an illegal status in order to attract 20 to 40 paying homeless people with SSI checks who are clean and sober. I mean, it's a sad situation. So we have lots of interviews. We have lots of stuff happening. We have an open phone line, 427-3772, and you are, in fact, tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And we're going to start with a few interviews that might interest not just our Santa Cruz listeners, but also listeners in other cities, since this program is also heard in San Francisco. Last show, we did an interview with Pebbles Trippett. And Pebbles Trippett, as you may remember, is sort of the Joan of Arc of the marijuana movement, as Food Not Bombs activist Tom Osher calls her. She has been fighting to legalize, decriminalize, re-legalize marijuana, at least for medical purposes, for the last 2 decades. And she's been arrested many times around this issue, served, months, if not years, in jail, and is facing more jail time. We followed her case most recently in the Contra Costa County courts, where she was sentenced to 6 months jail or home confinement. 3 years probation for 2 pounds of leaf, which she uses for her personal medical use, according to her testimony and according to her doctor's testimony. That didn't cut any weight with the judge, who didn't allow the testimony to come before the jury, so they couldn't make any decisions on that issue. She hasn't yet decided whether she's going to be taking this home imprisonment, which is, I guess, a situation where you have a bracelet around your ankle or something, and you can go out to the store and to the church, but you go anywhere else and they grab you. It's a little unclear to me. I guess hopefully never be a situation for me, although I too have a pending case, and who knows, maybe they'll offer to have me stay at home, provided I don't cook in the kitchen and give food out the window to homeless people. My conviction was for serving homeless people in San Francisco, and I was sentenced to 2 months in jail. But let's tune in on Pebbles Trippett and the kind of an update on what's been happening with her up north. Pebbles Trippett, marijuana activist, health activist, and here she is to speak for herself.
February 25th, 1996, Sunday, about 2 o'clock, we have an interview with Pebbles Trippett.
Hi, I'm on the line with Pebbles Trippett. Hi, Pebbles.
Yes, hi.
How are you doing?
Moving along.
Now, Pebbles, you're an activist in the field of cannabis, I guess you might say in the field of civil rights.
Civil rights, human rights, international link-ups with the plant world, seeing all of us as one.
And you're also a health activist, I believe.
I'm in favor of people getting the right to their natural medicine, and that's what I'm being denied and have been denied for, decades now, but...
Which brings us to the subject at hand. You recently came back from Mendocino County to Humboldt County, another court appearance?
That's true, another court appearance that went nowhere, but now I have these attorneys who are representing me in the Contra Costa case signed on to that Humboldt case.
Wow, so you're getting at last some legal support.
Yeah, and actually people are very principled. They're doing it pro bono, and you know, all they're asking for over time is the expenses to go up, you know, up to Humboldt and back with.
So are you able to provide this, or you're not?
I'm not in a position to even barely provide for.
Have you hired them a horse? How are you doing this?
Well, we're talking about a Free Pebbles defense committee, which could work within the already forming Friends of Mary Jane, the Alliance for Drug War Prisoners, which would link us up with the Europeans who have just formed their Alliance for Drug War Prisoners.
So what happened at this latest hearing up in Humboldt? We heard a bit from Tom Osher about how you were sentenced to 6 months either jail or house arrest.
In Contra Costa.
In Contra Costa with a 3-year probation. You can elaborate on that, and I'd like you to, but I just kind of wanted to jump ahead to Humboldt. Is anything, because that's going to be your next hurdle, right?
Well, actually, as it turns out, they're going to have to wait to see whether I'm in jail here or I decide to go into this, you know, onerous electronic bracelet program for a couple of months. It isn't for very long because I've already done 2 months in jail and previously when they were holding me on $150,000 bail.
Oh, right.
And so I did 2 months of the conviction that hadn't yet happened, and that's how they get you to do time that you don't deserve.
And you were also appealing that conviction, right?
Appealing the conviction, appealing the denial of bail, pending the outcome of the appeal.
But you have not had your sentence stayed. He's going to insist that you serve it even prior to that appeals resolution.
I had to stay long enough for me to see if I qualify for this electronic bracelet program. And that's approximately 3 to 5 weeks. So I do have a stay right now. That's why I'm
calling
able to talk with you.
You will be able to talk with us while you're on the bracelet program if you choose that, right?
Yeah. And I could actually raise funds for, you know, my own needs and the needs of the attorney team and beyond while I was out if I decide to go that way.
Mm-hmm. What are you thinking about? The bracelet program, for those who are interested, is what?
You're electronically hooked up to the sheriff's department like a walking time bomb. How would you like to have that on you?
Sounds pretty shocking.
So that anything you do wrong, spit in the street or any of the other things you might do wrong every day,
mm-hmm.
you know, could cause them to come down on your head.
This isn't actually a surveillance, but it's more simply that if you go beyond a certain point, the signal is broadcast or something? Or
Well, you know, you're allowed to go, I guess, buy your food and go to church if you do that, and go to your job, your regular job, if you do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then if there's anything else that you do that you don't tell them about, or anything that you do that's, you know, not what they allow, it's a trick bag.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go back. And so, you know, I would have to be awfully, awfully careful, like I'm unaccustomed to being.
Mm-hmm.
On that level, anyway, my life has been my own until now,
mm-hmm.
except for the one-year parole I once did, and I got through that okay
mm-hmm.
many years ago, 15 years ago. So it may be that that's the way to go, because then I don't have to make collect calls from jail. I phone myself and raise funds as opposed to spending funds.
Now, does this mean that you will not be able to smoke your joints for the migraine headaches that you have?
they would be depriving me of medicine and depriving me of the sacrament of my religion.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's what that would mean officially.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
ironically, if you went to jail, you'd probably be able to find a source inside the jail that would provide the marijuana.
they do that. And although they do test also, and so you're taking your chances on coming up with a new case or, you know, more time.
Mm-hmm. In fact, you could be sentenced to another 3 years because you're taking probation for 3 years, right?
I think that really what they might do is just throw me in jail again, and maybe I could top off in there. Probably not, but I'd probably have to come out on the same probation. It all just looks pretty grim. I also have a prescription for Marinol, which, you know, the THC in it is maybe the same thing they test for.
I see. So.
And so who knows, you know, how much of a problem that would cause them in terms of, you know, the THC that I'm testing for actually coming from the Marinol.
Have you found a wealthy donor to provide you with the Marinol, which I understand is somewhat more expensive?
Just the first.
What's that?
Just the first one, the first fill of it.
The first fill of it. So keep your cards and letters and Marinol contributions coming in to, what's your address, Jim? Pebbles.
1800 Market, number 213, San Francisco, 94102. And, you know, the $1, the $5, the $10 to people who can just spare a little sliver off the top like that, would go toward helping, you know, put gas in the car to get up to Humboldt and back. And, you know, and I also need to pay the attorneys for their gas, because they're doing this with enthusiasm and heart and, you know, research time and everything else, and all they're asking for are these meager expenses. It's so unusual
mm-hmm.
that I would like to make that possible. I think we need to reward attorneys, really, and all of us when we're doing the right thing.
Well, I'm glad that they're finally coming around after 15 years to doing the right thing, though, in all candor, the only reason they're doing this is because it looks like they may have a shot under the Religious Restoration Act decision, right?
The Ninth Circuit Federal Appeals Court decision interpreted the Religious Freedom Restoration Act as applying to this Rastafarian, you know, who got in a pickle for using his sacrament, and they said, well, if it's his religion and it's for his personal use,
he can smoke.
He can use that as a defense against this criminal charge.
Right, but that in turn has allowed these high-powered attorneys to finally get their shit together and get behind you.
Well, yeah, these are actually a part of a team of high-powered attorneys who themselves are, you know, just starting out after law school. I think each of them has been in law. Both of them have been law school, out of law school for 3 years,
mm-hmm.
and eager to get into a system that they don't have, you know, demoralizing experience, that there's nothing but injustice in the system,
mm-hmm.
and we have to just go for little tiny parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't gotten that experience yet, and so they very well may find out that they're plucking the just part of the system, which is the appeal arena, the constitutionality arena. That's
mm-hmm.
what they want to do. Almost no one has been doing that. So it seems to me these are smart attorneys who know the time of day, who see an opportunity here. I don't want people to spin wheels on me either,
mm-hmm.
just because I need it. It's better to spin my own wheels for a long time and find the way and then offer it. And that's what's happened, and it seems to be working that way.
Well, you're very very charitable toward these attorneys, and much more so than I would be, Pebbles.
Well, the other attorneys I don't feel so charitable toward.
No, I mean to the legal profession generally, which has essentially left you out in the cold for the last 15 years, you know.
Unfortunately, not worth the diddly squat.
You got it. At least we agree on that.
but I look for the cream of the crop in humanity and in possibilities and ideas. And
even in so low a place as a legal office.
Well, you know, they could actually return to the place where the Constitution, return the country to the place where the Constitution matters and where the principles that we all hold dear, you know, liberty, freedom, you know, equality, equal protection, you know, privacy that means something, you know, your own body, your own bedroom, your own garden, your own window. All of those things just make life seem like it opens up a cornucopia of possibilities with respect to growing marijuana for medical purposes, for instance, if it's for your personal use, with a doctor's authorization.
Mm-hmm.
All of that is completely within our grasp within a very short period of time if we use the Constitution to get to the U.S. Supreme Court and do something that they've been known to do in critical times in history.
Well, I hope you're right. I'm
like
again.
With abortion, when some harm was involved, and there was no harm involved with.
Of course, that was 73, and this is 96. But who knows? Well, you could be right, and I certainly hope you are. But what are you facing up in Humboldt? Do you want to give us the grim picture?
Oh, well, mainly it's you know, whether or not they're going to just charge me with transportation and possession, or they're going and drop the sales charge. In each other case, they know that I'm not doing it for sales by the time we get finished with the prelim. The prelim won't be set yet because I may be in jail and I can't even make it up there. And so it'll be continued, probably. And
what is the charge?
It's transportation, possession, and sales at this point.
How much?
It's probably about 2.5 pounds, but, you know, truthfully, it had just been given to me as a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't even been able to check it out before the happenstance.
And you were just dragged aside and...
I was just on the highway with somebody who told me to turn left to take her home, someone I'd never met before, and her directions weren't clear to me, and I asked her here, and she said, no, up there, and so I went back into the other lane to make the turn further up, and that was called weaving, and it justified the stop and the search, a subsequent search, because they always claim that I smell of marijuana, and I always do a little bit, I suppose, but I always have anyway. So, and the you know, the stuff was found, and I spent, you know, overnight in the Humboldt jail, and unlike any other place in life, they released me on OR, because they saw no harm. They said their reason was they saw nothing being done here to warrant them keeping me. It's such an enlightened attitude to release someone on OR they've never met before based on their charge.
Mm-hmm. Although you got to say that Humboldt does not have a reputation for enlightened practices toward either visitors or locals growing marijuana.
Well, not the government, but, you know, then I'm relying on the jury or the public. And even the judge could grant the right to use a medical necessity defense.
Mm-hmm.
It, because they have an attitude that we have to interpret this as a balance of harms, as opposed to whether or not it's an emergency. I think that's historically how it's always been interpreted until this modern age. And so I'm for returning everything to the most enlightened era, and so are the Republicans. Principled conservatives would say, at least in principle, and libertarians are in principle, and progressives, you know, are in principle or could be, and so I think that there, you know, our options are pessimism about how much things have been eroded, or optimism as we see the points where we can make a difference.
When is your next hearing up there in Humboldt?
It's next Thursday.
Oh, really? And that is what? That's a pre-trial or?
It's prelim. The preliminary hearing, though, will be continued, you see, and so because the lawyers are new and they're going to ask for that continuance, and also because of the uncertainty of whether I'm going to be in jail here.
So this is, again, what date?
It is Thursday, The 29th.
Thursday, February 29th, at what time?
10 a.m.
In what court?
In Eureka.
In Eureka?
Is there a
caravan going up to that one, or is this a sort of...
No, I think it's really a waste for people unless they're in the area.
You might contact Food Not Bombs in Arcata. They might come.
Arcata, you're right.
Yeah, you might talk to them because they themselves are facing, of course, judicial nonsense from local authorities for serving free food, and I think they understand your situation and sympathize with it.
If we no doubt.
Give you their number, and you guys could kind of form some kind of support group.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good to me.
Anything you want to add before we kind of end this?
Okay, about the religious angle, which has not enough has been said on. That's really the deeper angle. I mean, I'm defining medical as spiritual and physical medicine. You know, do you have your medicine with you? Do you have your plant with you? No, it's always been known as enlightening and healing medicine throughout the ages. All people of the earth and most cultures, you know, have had a taste of marijuana in some form or other over the ages. Most of them, I'm finding out, see it as sacramental. And many of the world's religions openly declare it as sacramental, like the Rastafarians. And much of India, because of the strain of enlightened Hinduism going all the way back, turns out, you know, we're enlightened under the use of marijuana, and that's why they don't send people in India to jail, because it's so ingrained in the religious culture of the people. And so when you take people's sacrament away from them, you're taking away, you know, the glue that holds the society together. The plant world is the one that has historically, the psychoactive plant world has done that for societies. And that's why the importance of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act of 1993, you know, is very great. And we have nothing for medical. We have nothing comparable for restoring prescription. We have no congressional statute like the RFRA is. And we have no Ninth Circuit decision, a federal appeals court decision like this recent one on personal use for Rastafarians and anyone who's exercising their religion. And so let's not underestimate the importance of this. What happened was a bad decision came down from the U.S. Supreme Court over peyote. And usually we blame the person who takes a bad decision to court by saying, oh, you've set us back.
Isn't that the Oregon Supreme Court you're talking about?
It started there, and then the U.S. Supreme Court affirmed it.
Uh-huh.
And so the religions got scared.
Mm-hmm.
All the religions of the world, the Wicca.
Huh. So I was right in my last interview.
They band together and they pressured their congresspeople, and within about 2 years, you know, a very small span of time, Kennedy and one of their legislators introduced the bill, and there was so much pressure to pass it that there was hardly any dissent.
Mm-hmm.
To introduce the compelling interest standard with respect to interfering with people's religious rights. It's that simple. And so the bad decision produced the good decision. And so it's all unfolding, and what we're looking at is the scheme of things. And, you know, it can sometimes mobilize the best in the human spirit when something very, very bad has just developed. So I feel that, you know, we just need to know that truth and history are on our side. We're going to regain our right to medicine and our right to sacrament. And other psychoactive plants really cannot be differentiated. Peyote is already the same. And so the rest will follow.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that it's interesting. The last time we spoke, we brought up this subject, and you were kind of optimistic about the courts. And I pointed out that the Rehnquist Court was nothing to be optimistic about. And then you pointed out that, I pointed out that the Rehnquist Court had been the ones responsible for this horrible decision that threw out, you know, the right of, I guess it was a person using peyote to get unemployment compensation or some...
No, they were just using it in their personal life.
Right, some job protection that they...
They were working for the government was all.
Right, and they were denied their unemployment or some such thing.
Uh-huh.
And the Rehnquist Court upheld this ridiculousness, and the Congress, surprisingly enough, passed the Religious Restoration Act, which I think is great.
The concern, of course, I had, and I don't wish to throw cold water on the courts because I think every avenue of resistance is a good one, is that you're likely to run into Rehnquist again. And Rehnquist is going to be looking over this Rastafarian decision. Now, this time, of course, he will have to deal with the Congress and the fact that it's passed the bill. That in
and
essence,
with his own appeals court, just one level under him.
Right, although he, you know, he's a higher court, so he can do what he wants in that respect.
Not necessarily on issues whose time has come, including abortion, can they do what they want.
I remember abortion was done by a much, much more liberal court.
And upheld recently. The only thing that's happening is the funds are being lost, and that was predictable. There has been no rollback of the principle.
Now, well, but Pat Buchanan assures us. I know, what am I saying? I'm sorry, go ahead. A little joke.
Okay, do they want the revolt of the women? I don't know that they do.
Mm-hmm.
And so they will get that.
Indeed.
If they roll that back. And so I don't think so. I think they're smarter than that. They know very well about the necessity of the balance.
Any word from Italy? You mentioned you'd heard there had been legislative reform in Italy around marijuana, and I was looking for the source you had on that, and you didn't quite know.
Hoffman Psychedelic Museum,
mm-hmm.
Is there now as the keynote speaker in England at the University of England with a high-level debate going on within the government as to whether to impose mandatory minimums in that country.
You were talking about that before.
And
yeah.
Then the response from the grassroots, including this Alliance for Drug War Prisoners, is to say, no, how horrible it's working in America. And so that they're meeting right now, and I expect that when Dr. Beresford gets back, there'll be more newspaper articles with specific information.
Well, you might check the most recent issue of Prison Life. I'm not trying to let you look forward to any further prison life, actually. But the issue is about the drug war, and it's kind of an interesting issue. So you might check it out. It's a magazine that has a lot of... You ever read Prison Life? It's directly from the prisoners, since, or at least they claim it's directly from prisoners. It's also a slick publication, so...
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know where to find it, but I suppose...
You get down to Berkeley, you're in the Berkeley area, Cody's Bookstore.
Okay, I'll check it out.
Okay. Anything else that you want people to know, or any other place people can get information about your case?
Well, there's the class action suit that we filed, and we're looking for people who've been harmed in any way by the drug war.
Mm-hmm.
Which means, you know, have they been deprived of medicine, which doesn't require a bust? Have they been, are they deprived of the feeling of safety to use the blood supply, or are they scared of it? That doesn't require any bust, just a natural fear. Or have they been incarcerated, done time for... You know, things they've just done to their own body, and would they like to get even?
Mm-hmm.
it
and give the address again. They should call or write.
Call or write, Box 1838, Mendocino, 95460.
Mm-hmm.
And that's 707-937-COOP, COOP.
That's the phone number.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Well... Thank you, Pebbles, for another update, and I appreciate your calling, and I want you to keep us advised as to exactly what goes on. If
the people want literature, we could do a little packet, and we just ask $1 for the stamps and stuff.
Okay.
And yours is on the way.
All right, then I'll have to send you $1 when I get it.
No, not necessarily. This is a good exchange.
All right. Well, look, give me... Give me the word next week on how things go at your preliminary, or I guess it's your continued preliminary hearing.
Probably a continuance. I will. I'll call you when there may be word in other ways.
And if you can't reach me, have your support man, Tom, give a call.
All right. Will do. And thanks for being there and giving a shit.
Keep up the fight.
We can be sure. It's coming.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Pebbles.
And that was me interviewing Pebbles Trippett, health, cannabis activist, human rights activist, who not single-handedly, I guess she is single-handed in her own way, now she has some legal support, and certainly there are hundreds of thousands of people serving time in jails throughout the country, or who have served time in jails throughout the country for so-called crimes related to cannabis, marijuana. thanks to the shitstorm of bigotry that has inundated the country for the last four decades on the issue, and which still inundates the country. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. This is Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris. You're on 96.3 FM, and that's what you're tuned to if you're listening to me. You can speak out if you want. The phone line's open, 427-3772, 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Got a call during that tape from D-Bob, who's one of the main men behind Food Not Bombs in Santa Cruz, one of the several groups that concerns itself with making sure people can eat who are on the streets. Food Not Bombs serves Saturday and Sunday at 1 o'clock at River and Josephine across from the Stapleton store in the vacant lot there. They even serve in the rain. Apparently they served in the hail this weekend. And they are serving Wednesday night at 4 or 5. I'm never sure which. I think it's 4. Well, call Food Not Bombs at 425-3345 to get the authoritative word on that. Anyway, they need some help. They need cooks. And they need vegetable choppers. They need moral support. They need immoral support. Give them a call, 425-3345, particularly on Wednesdays and Saturdays. And, of course, their organizational meeting, if you're interested, is actually happening tonight. And that meeting happens at the Café Pergolesi, which I believe is on Cedar Street, about a block from the mall, Cedar, block up from Cathcart. And I don't quite know the name of that street, but it's the Café Pergolesi for all of you longtime Santa Cruz residents. If you don't know where it is, look it up in the phone book, P-E-R-G-O-L-E-I-S-I, L-E-S, Pergolesi, P-E-R-G-O-L-E-S-I. That's it, Pergolesi. And that's tonight at 7 o'clock. And you'll find the folks, Food Not Bombs, meeting out on the porch. So if you want to join, help, spread the word, call them up, or show up at that meeting.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz?
Yeah, that's the meeting location is Elm and Cedar Streets.
Oh, thank you. This is D-Bob, right?
Yeah.
And D-Bob, you were calling earlier. Now we got you on the phone. And you, of course, are facing what I regard as a bogus battery charge from one of the hosts, John Behrens, after he pepper gassed you, and that's happening tomorrow, not today as we previously reported, right?
Right.
And actually what you're facing tomorrow is simply an arraignment where you'll make a plea and then get a public defender and then come back presumably for a further hearing a week or two down the road. And are you inviting folks to come to this arraignment?
Well, an arraignment I don't think requires a lot of people to be involved, really.
That's true. It's kind of a boring procedure, but if you happen to be in the courts tomorrow, at, I guess around 8:30, you might find... What name exactly are you going to be under for folks who want to find you?
I'm not going to give my legal name.
No problem. So, but you will let us know what happens.
Okay.
And we hope that we can follow this. I was hoping to play an interview today with the supervisor, host supervisor Matt. Unfortunately, I don't have the tape here. One of the tapes was mislabeled, and I have an incorrect tape, so I'm going to have to dig into my archives and find the right tape. But, hey, I encourage you to continue struggling and continue feeding, and I hope people show up to your meeting tonight. Anything more you want to say about Food Not Bombs?
No, I just wanted to clarify the Pergolesi's exact location.
Yeah, Elm and Cedar, as you were saying.
Yeah.
And that's 7 o'clock tonight?
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And Food Not Bombs, of course, is only one of the several organizations that serves free food. Another one is Feed the People, which also serves four or five nights a week on downtown mall area at Cathcart and Pacific at so-called Hippie Corner, right next to the Ford's parking lot. If you want to help Feed the People, you can certainly give them a call at 425-FEED, 425-3333. And if anybody is listening from Feed the People and wants to call in and give an update and talk about Feed the People, I encourage them to do that. We haven't really had much of an update from them recently. And I, frankly, have been quite impressed with the support Feed the People has given not only to people with food, but they've also shown up at several other public functions, such as the attempt of certain conservatives, merchants, to fence off the Ford's parking lot, which failed. And a 4-3 vote, amazingly enough, at City Council about a week or two ago. Sean, Feed the People workers, showed up there and spoke against it. Sean also tried to show up at curfew hearings to speak against a curfew on behalf of young people who use Feed the People. He wasn't able to find the appropriate place to be, but he made an attempt to do it, which is more than almost anybody else in the community did. I think there were two of us, the police chief and the sheriff, and the body that was hearing the testimony. Not much public turnout for that particular hearing. So I'm also concerned, and the reason I particularly want to commend Feed the People and actually get a word out to Sean and Feed the People and those who are working with him, John Earth and others, is that I feel Feed the People really is, even though it calls itself a non-political organization, and it's not really politics we're talking here, it's basic human rights. I've always kind of, people who say, well, I don't want to be political. Politics has sort of overtones of factionalism and personality cults and voting for one personality over another and fancy dealing and all that sort of thing, and finagling and backroom smoky areas and such. In fact, what we're talking about is the restoration of basic human rights for a whole class of people that is always under attack and most recently have been eroded by the anti-homeless downtown ordinances, the presence of the hosts, who, as you've heard, at least one of the hosts is now packing pepper gas in his back pocket. And so when he tells you to move, you get the added incentive that if you don't move, who knows, he might whip out his pepper gas and let you have it. You know, it's interesting. I don't know. I'm not claiming he did that in D-Bob's case. There may be some ambiguous facts here, but I find it quite frightening and angering that we have a city whose merchants have so much power that they can coerce or pressure or smooth talk a city council that's supposedly liberal into setting up a hosts program that is the sort of friendly face of fascism in the downtown mall. And I, in fact, have actually written a petition for a demilitarized mall, which I'm going to be reading to you in just a moment.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Well, good morning. How you doing?
That sounds like battling Bob LaMonica to me.
Well, this is Bob. Hi.
How you doing, Bob?
Good. I was just tipped on the issue of becoming political that you were referring to, and it seems to me that that's what we need. We need to become politicized.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why so many of these things happen that people disagree with in terms of power relationships and, you know, how the community is established or not established is our political issues.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to find ways as individuals to become politicized enough to recognize that we have ultimately the power, right? We the people. And the only way that things are going to change in any way is that people cue into their power.
So I think that, you know, for some people power is a dirty word, but that's to a large extent because they attribute it with illegitimate power and the power of those who oppress them. I think what we're really looking for is to regain the power that we should have as human beings in a human community that essentially has been stolen from us or which has been sort of mystified away, so we're not aware of the power that we have. And I guess I agree with you in that respect. I think politics to some extent is the science of power in the human community, but not, you know, struggling and grappling and gouging for power, but organizing to regain the power that, for instance, will allow us to institute common sense again around issues like marijuana, around issues like corruption in the district attorney's office, around issues like civil rights on the streets in downtown Santa Cruz, or police abuse, and so forth.
Well, they're all tied in that way. These kind of things have happened and continue to happen because people look the other way.
But also because they feel that they don't have any expertise in these areas, that they don't know what's going on, that they have to somehow defer to those who know what's happening, and often those who know what's happening have been, as you've often put it, co-opted, or who are not interested, or who are themselves a part of the problem.
And as you just put it, these issues really, for the most part, are common sense. If we're going to have standards, they should not be double. We should do as much of our public work above board and not in closed session. When I hear that a group like the Citizens Committee for Homeless meets in closed session, well, you know, my antenna goes up. I mean, what are they doing meeting in closed session? For what reason? They're supposed to be serving the public, right?
Mm-hmm.
Providing this service, and they're meeting in closed session for what purpose? So the more that we move away from openness, where we explain ourselves what we're doing on a common sense basis. I believe that democracy, these processes are established for
all of us. There is a highest common denominator. We can do most of it, if not all of it. All of the important issues can be dealt with by the people.
Mm-hmm.
And there is absolutely no reason, at least as I can figure out, why a group that's supposed to be serving the public, like the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, should meet in closed session.
Mm-hmm.
And when we begin to tolerate and allow these things, we allow government to slip further and further away from us.
Yeah, actually, it's interesting. I mean, the attempt to make sure that these governmental and non-governmental, you know, non-profit association bodies, the bodies that have the power to run the, that do have the power to run the homeless services, that they meet in public, has to be constantly reaffirmed and reasserted. For instance, the subcommittees of the city council used to meet privately here in Santa Cruz until Nick Whitehead and I just barged into one of their meetings and said, you can't do this. And so the next meeting suddenly was public, and it's the Public Safety Subcommittee, and it's been public ever since. Now, Scott Kennedy didn't want that. Scott Kennedy was running private meetings without agendas, without notice, nothing, you know. He was having private meetings with the police chief and so forth and so on, and of course he's ultimately produced a Citizens Police Review Board that is gutless and fangless and a toy poodle and hasn't done diddly squat, really. Well, they have a nice office and a nice staff, and they've been around for a year. You know, I mean, that's all very nice. So I think, you know, you have to insist on open government. You have to insist on, you have to get into politics in the sense that you have to inform yourself about what's going on. And the more we inform each other, the better it is. And I think one of the reasons that people are so disillusioned about politics is because, you know, you have Tweedledee and Tweedledum running the country, and then you have people downtown running the city who call themselves progressives, but then close down the only open-air campground in the country, and, you know, are ready to throw all their money at the people that closed it down. So it's...
I think a lot of it is fear of becoming empowered, because when you become empowered, it means that you're accountable and you can be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we would rather avoid dealing with that and become cynical, right, and just allow ourselves to succumb to what will ultimately become a police state,
mm-hmm.
ruled by a secret society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we come to the point where we have these facades, these procedural facades, like the police review board, and they don't really review anything. They kind of create this paper loop, this closed loop,
mm-hmm.
where nothing really gets done. What we have is we have, as Charlie Phillips calls it, an illusion of democracy. I think it's time that we admit these things. We're about ready to enter the next millennium, for whatever that's worth.
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of values do we want to go into that next 1,000 years with? I think we should not go into the next 1,000 years with procedural facades as being the practical definition of democracy in America. We're making a grave mistake. It's important that we become politicized.
Well, Bob, your man has been working, you no longer have a radio show on Free Radio Santa Cruz, but you've been working for a long time with issues of corruption in the county government, particularly the DA's office, and I understand you're heading a new recall movement against Art Danner.
Well, in fact, the petition should be released within a matter of days from the county clerk. We're planning a campaign kickoff next week, March 6th, and there's a good plan for that to have hopefully enough of a spectacle where this will get the coverage that it should have gotten last year rather than being suppressed to death. I believe that what was accomplished last year in the standpoint of educating people and confronting power with the truth was a very significant accomplishment. You know, albeit it failed, we did not achieve enough signatures to make it to the ballot. We did create enough of a groundwork to make another challenge. And this being a political season coming up, the issue is that can this issue of abuse of power, and we're talking about the district attorney, not a wayward cop, right, not a supervisor, not that that's not bad enough, but the DA, who's supposed to represent, deal fair, play straight. What keeps me involved in this issue is the utter blatancy. The district attorney directed time cards to be falsified, overlapping the June 1994 election. It was the failure of the Board of Supervisors, December 6, 94, to act upon that, that provided the critical mass to launch a recall.
Indeed, and we're talking about the Catherine Gardner case,
you
where
bet.
An employee was essentially in a cocaine scandal. It was kept quiet so Danner could get reelected.
You bet. And this issue reached the Board of Supervisors, who were elected to recognize and respond to abuse of power, who failed utterly. And the fact of the matter is that Fred Keeley, who wants to run for assembly, is implicated. Jan Buttes, who wants a third term, As a supervisor is implicated, Walt Simons, who wants a second term, is implicated. They need to justify their role in essentially overlooking and sweeping under the carpet a gross abuse of power. Now, the other part of the 1-2 punch, because we have, there is a list of allegations that fits across the board, everything that you would think that could happen once you're allowed to get away with whatever you want in the sense of cronyism and double standards. But the other part of the 1-2 punch is 8.5 years ago, the DA is involved in a car wreck, June 9th of 87. The victim, Sandra Larson's blood is tested in the hospital, and the at-fault drinking driver is not. And the at-fault drinking driver was then 8.5 year DA Art Danner. And there's no question that he was drinking. He admits drinking. He was having some drinks with some representatives from Honeywell Corporation at the Holiday Inn just prior to the car wreck.
So, Bob, how can people get in touch with you to support the recall?
They can call 457-2670.
And I also, incidentally, invite Art Danner, whose office I called this morning, if you're listening, Art, or any other sympathizers with Art or supporters, you're welcome to call in and respond to these charges. I have never actually heard an intelligible, clear response to the charges, and I'd like to.
There can be none, and I welcome it. Mm-hmm. But what is always done is they try to discredit those that bring forth allegations. This is an old, sleazy technique, and or it's all based on faulty information. So the allegations are never addressed.
Well, let's discuss that further as your recall proceeds. I'm gonna move on to the next item here now, Bob.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
And it's Free Radio Santa Cruz, as you probably know, 96.3 FM. Indeed, I did call the district attorney's office this morning in order to invite Art Danner to discuss another issue, the curfew. As you may remember, I think I've mentioned on the air earlier, Art Danner at the last curfew hearing claimed that even though the curfew law simply states violating the curfew in the county shall be a misdemeanor, period, with no statement that there will be a warning on the first offense and a diversion on the second offense and so forth and so on, the claim is that protections are there in spite of the bald, the curfew violation shall be a misdemeanor language, because of existing welfare and institution code language. And I finally got from Art Danner last Thursday three sections of the law which Art claims are the basis for his belief that there's no concern, there's no need to be concerned about youths facing an arrest record and also being tried for misdemeanors. Hang on, we have a phone call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, this is Researcher Al.
Oh, hi, Researcher Al. Good to hear you. I actually have an interview with someone in San Francisco from the Coalition on Homelessness.
Okay.
And I'm going to hope that you have some new and exciting information. When you last talked to us, you were kind of tracking down a KPFA story from about a week ago, which claimed that Willie Brown, the great new liberal mayor of San Francisco, had some sort of relocation plan for the homeless of San Francisco to put them in Treasure Island.
Yes.
And what have you found, Al?
Well, I just got off the phone with his coordinator for homelessness.
Willie Brown's coordinator?
Yes, his name is Mark Trotz.
Uh-huh.
And offhand, he didn't want to front himself out too much. Like, there doesn't seem to be anything definite. And I try to, you know, feel him out a little bit on how, you know, plans of that nature, how you could implement things like that. And he didn't want to get into it. And where it stands right now is that he wants to think about what to talk about, and he said he was going to call me back.
Mm-hmm.
But a couple of information pieces here. What he was saying is, are you familiar with an entity called Rubicon?
I'm not. Tell me about it.
Okay, what it is that the military on Shelter Island.
Treasure Island?
Oh, I'm sorry. I keep calling it Shelter Island.
No, maybe you're a man ahead of your time.
Yes, I know. Always.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Treasure Island. The military seems to be, according to Mr. Mark Trotz, they seem to be hiring homeless people already.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good.
Huh?
That's good that they're hiring people.
Yeah, to work on the island as groundskeepers.
Uh-huh.
And that seems to be happening through this thing called Rubicon. Now, you know, I've not spoken to them or whoever that is or what that is even, you know.
Right.
So, That's about the only thing I could find out so far.
Well, I want to commend you, Al. You are, as I was saying in the last show, our first real researcher who has been trying to dig out the dirt and get into the facts and, you know, get down to the nitty-gritty here.
Well, what I'm afraid of in the long run, and this is, you know, it's not paranoia, but if you look at it this way, if you take a whole big isolated island like that, you could potentially take a lot of people and put them on that island under some form of coercion, potentially. You know, for instance, clean up downtown, you see.
Or parole violation, or
anything,
probation condition.
You see, you could make a whole concentration island.
Oh, no. They would never do that.
Could that happen? No.
Not in the United States. It can't happen here.
Yes, it can. You know, I was listening to last afternoon on KSCO, they had the Paul Meursault person on.
Paul Meursault was on KSCO?
Yes.
No way.
Another big discussion on homelessness.
Paul Meursault is the director of the former, he's actually the killer of the open-air shelter.
Yes.
And he's one of the paid employees of the Citizens Committee to oppress, the Citizens Committee for the homeless.
Yes, but one question to interject into that. If there are these citizens, right, they call themselves citizens, like, you know, for the homeless, why don't they say we're the citizens for the homeless citizens? You see, they always leave that little thing out. It's kind of degrading in a way, because then the homeless, when you bring in the word, citizens, like, homeless are not citizens then, right? You know, it's a far jump, but it kind of bugs me.
It contrasts citizens and
homeless.
There's
a contrast.
True.
Yes, you see what I'm saying?
Actually, it was brought up to me by a homeless activist from the 80s, a man named Eddie Hicks.
Oh, I'm sure.
He actually ran into me before he reached the air, and I'm encouraging him to call in. Eddie, if you're listening, call in.
Yeah.
He's a shy guy. But he wanted to point out that the word homeless itself is kind of a misnomer. We're talking about houseless people.
Exactly.
And he says he didn't like the word poor either.
Exactly, or people that don't happen to pay rent at
the time.
He likes
the word disenfranchised, because he feels that people on the streets and such are disenfranchised from power and disenfranchised from basic human rights.
They are, yes. And this is kind of what I'm researching. When people call into radio shows, let's just say on KSJO, I don't listen so much what Paul Meursault says, because everybody kind of knows who he is. But it's interesting.
When was his show, by the way?
Pardon me?
When was his show?
Oh, last afternoon?
Yeah.
Oh, evening? You know, I didn't look on the time again.
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of like,
I'll try to call in for equal time. I think that someone should respond to Meursault.
Yes, there was controversy. That's not, you know, to say that it was totally one-sided. I have to be fair. But what I kind of check into is what kind of people, and actually what people of the, let's just say, the right, you know, it boils down to they want the city cleaned up. Basically what that means is they want, you know, most people that look different, for instance,
sent to Treasure Island, perhaps.
They may not know that about that. Mm-hmm. Going on, but potentially this is what people want, really.
Well, Al, let me cut this short, because I do appreciate the report you give me. I want to kind of move into this. We have an interview with Judy Appel, the attorney at the Coalition on Homelessness, who may be covering some of the same issues, though, again, I don't
think
she's gotten much further than you have in finding out what's going on, but I appreciate your continuing to find it, at least investigate the question.
Yeah, it's just a watchdog on it, you know. Wow, wow, wow. So
yeah.
I'll...
Do some barking and do some biting.
Do some barking.
All right, and go for it. And don't forget to show up at Daniel Hopkins' appeal tomorrow night if you can. That's city council, I guess, around 8 o'clock.
I've got my own port commission battle
I'm meeting
tomorrow night.
Oh, really?
So...
Is a court situation tomorrow night for you?
No, it's commission. The port commission.
Oh, port commission. Okay.
Yes.
Well, I'll leave you to that, and I thank you for calling in.
Okay.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
And that was the vigorous and tireless Al. I'd like to kind of quote before I do, and it's pertinent to what Al was saying, but he was talking about Paul Meursault and the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which Apparently Paul got some airtime on KSCO. We can't get a response from him, as I said, on Basic Human Rights for the Homeless. When you call his phone line, I believe it's 427-2367. I thought of that, or 423-2367. It's one of those two numbers, in case you have an interest in talking with Pardonnez-moi Paul, as I call him. The Community House Project is going to be having weekly meetings at the Garfield Park Church, 8:15 every morning, every Friday morning, each week. So coming up on Friday at 8:15 in the morning, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless Subcommittee on Community House, headed by Lonnie, I think it's Merkelhaus, who's the secretary of the Citizens Committee, will be meeting there. Now, whether they will attempt to exclude the public, I'm not sure. But certainly I encourage you to go to Garfield Park Church, look for the CCH headquarters, which is in the main building of Garfield Park Church, and march on up and say you want to be around when the discussions on CCH are happening. I mean, on the Community House Trailers Not Trolls project is happening, and that's happening again every Friday, 8:15 in the morning, according to an announcement made at their last board meeting, which I, of course, couldn't attend under pain of arrest, but I have my sources, and they told me that that's what's cooking. Now, with us in the studio is the inevitable Dan Hopkins, who has again come out of the muck and mire, the hail and the cold. Actually, it's not been raining or hailing today, but it certainly has been rather cold. And Dan has been apparently working on his maiden speech before the city council for tomorrow night. And as I've been putting out throughout the show, Dan will be appealing the Community House Trailer Project permit situation. And why don't I give it to him to talk a little bit about that. And I'm going to do that, actually. But first, gosh, I've got surrounded with things I want to do. Let me do this first. There's an interesting article in the February 1996 issue of a Oakland homeless publication called Street Spirit, which I really want to read to you. It's a letter, an open letter to Mayor Willie Brown of San Francisco from Sister Bernie Galvin on behalf of the steering committee, Religious Witness with Homeless People. And this is a group that supported me and other people with the organization Food Not Bombs in San Francisco when we were being arrested for serving free food. This is an organization that slept out on the steps of City Hall in San Francisco as the Matrix program under Mayor Jordan arrested people for having backpacks in public places, for sleeping at night in public places. It's a good organization. Anyway, she writes the following. Dear Mayor Willie Brown, as you know, Religious Witness with Homeless People organized and mobilized and protested and prayed for an end to the misguided Matrix program unleashed by ex-Mayor Frank Jordan. We were overjoyed when both you and Roberta Achtenberg met with members of Religious Witness during the mayoral campaign and declared your commitment to end Matrix's inhumane and unconstitutional provisions. We still hold out hope that homeless people will have a new day of justice and fair treatment during the Brown administration, a new climate of acceptance, a new opportunity to find housing and employment. But we urge you to give the community a clear sign that this new day of fair treatment has begun. We urge you to act immediately to abolish the unconstitutional program of repression and police sweeps carried out by the Jordan administration. We believe the following recommended actions will reassure the community that you have upheld the commitment you made throughout the campaign to eliminate entirely the cruel Matrix program. In the view of the 27,000 members of Religious Witness with Homeless People, Matrix will truly have ended when the following steps are taken. 1. Instruct the police to immediately stop citing, fining, and arresting homeless citizens for sleeping outdoors or covering themselves with a blanket in the park. An aside here for you Santa Cruz listeners, Lighthouse Linda LeMaster of Housing Now was saying to me yesterday that she feels all the parks should be thrown open to the homeless in Santa Cruz for lodging in the current shelter crisis, particularly with the Paul Meursault's destruction of the open-air shelter with the collusion of Mayor Rotkin and Councilmember Kennedy. What we need in this emergency situation is the right to sleep at night, and the right to sleep in public parks if necessary, since parks at least have a certain isolated quality. Most people don't use them at night except those who need to use them. We have an incoming phone call. We're going to interrupt this reading of Street Spirit and actually interrupt my interruption of this reading to say hi.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
I totally agree with you, Robert, about we've got to open these campgrounds. And sorry about yesterday. I didn't communicate better. I was just burned out from that.
No. I Charlie, you didn't show up at a Huff meeting, and you were called in the wee hours of the morning on, well, you were called obscenely early in the morning on Sunday morning. I should tell our listeners that Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, holds meetings on very short notice, and I just thought you'd be interested, and I apologize for waking you up so early.
Yeah, I am. I'm definitely interested. And we've got to rescind the camping ban. This is just a travesty on humanity of Santa Cruz. And Santa Cruz has got to come forth and open their heart to the homeless.
You know, I want to point out to our audience that we are talking to Charlie Phillips, a longtime video photographer who's really rigorous work has produced several fine documentaries, particularly Campground, and I'm hoping you could even get together a thing
okay,
called...
Okay, by the way, I'm just about to go up to Henry Cowell and present the question that Becky's often spoke to me about the cost of one camper versus the cost of housing for that CCH is...
The Community House Project.
Community House Project, and the quite a money so well spent. Well, I have a deference to that.
Yeah, well, you know, I hope you bring that information to the mayor's office tomorrow, because there's going to be a hearing in which CCH will be, I think they're going to try to throw $47,000 at CCH, 8:15 tomorrow morning at the city council, city manager's chambers right next to the mayor's office. And I believe since it's a public... It's a meeting of the so-called Social Services Subcommittee. You will have a right to film if you happen to have access to a camera.
I'm going to try to have.
Okay. That right. might be of interest, I think, for your continuing documentary on this subject, Charlie.
I totally agree. So I look forward to seeing you. In fact, I'm supposed to meet a guy heading up to Hedrick Cowell in about the next 10 minutes.
Well, I'll let you go, and I also want to commend you for really documenting the controversy around CCH. You were present at the December meeting when CCH cut off debate and refused to hear testimony about malfeasance of its two main employees, namely Paul Marceau and Daryl Darling. You were there
true.
With the camera. I remember that.
That's true, and we've...
And I hope I can get a copy of that film soon.
I am. I'm seeking it out. We've got to see what I can do.
I hope you can.
Soon.
Well, hope to see you tomorrow morning at 8:15 in the morning, and I hope the rest of our audience shows up, too. Pack into that room, and don't let CCH get a private deal with Mayor Rotkin and his Social Services Subcommittee without the public watching.
Well, I'll be there one way or another, and look forward to others, to see others there.
Thank you very much, Charlie Phillips.
Thank you.
Indeed. So I don't need to urge you again to show up tomorrow at the City Council, City Manager's Office, which is right there at City Hall.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah, this is Al again.
Hi, Al.
Talking about this camping, the camping aspect, here's a little story that I would like to relate to everyone.
Go ahead.
Now, we have lived in this area for over 20 years, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We have gone to Henry Cowell Park, to the river, my kids and I, everyone, for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Just recently, it was kind of a, you know, when the river gets big in the winter, kids like to play in it, things like that, right?
Right.
Throw rocks in it and, you know,
right.
and just check it out.
Right.
We've done this all throughout the years. At least once a winter we go check out the, in the park, you park the car, you kind of walk down, you know,
mm-hmm.
takes about 20 minutes to get to the bottom of it, and usually there's not too many people around, like zero. Okay, so not too long ago, we did this, and we were down there about half an hour, and all of a sudden, this, I guess he's a ranger.
Right, Parks and Rec.
A Japanese-American ranger
mm-hmm.
started yelling and shouting, you know, at us, and I could not even, this was so strange. So he comes huffing and puffing up, and really, you know, like, and I looked at his shoes. He still had his dress shoes on. He had his big pistol out. He had his walkie-talkie, and it wasn't functioning so good because it was down in the canyon.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what it was, he didn't like us being there.
Uh-huh.
I mean, this has, you know, never happened in 20 years. And he was, what are you doing here? Like, what are you doing here? I say, what do you mean what I'm doing here? We're just, you know, we're being in this damn state park, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hanging out on the river, just hanging out with the river. And he couldn't understand this. And basically what it was, you see, his walkie-talkie didn't work. And so he was getting extremely nervous. I'm not kidding you.
Mm-hmm.
And it ended up that he escorted myself and my kids out of there.
He ordered you to leave?
No, he did not specifically say that.
Uh-huh.
You see what I'm trying to say?
Well, why did
this is where this whole psychological little interplay comes in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which
you felt threatened, though. Huh?
Well, he definitely. Well, obviously, totally confronted.
Right.
And he ended up, you know, walking behind us. He didn't even listen. He was not. You know, this wasn't even. You know, a guy used to the outdoor.
Did he cite any law?
He saw our car up on Highway 9.
Right.
This guy just went ballistic, man, and started running down,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it kind of looked like a certain older vehicle, you know.
Did he claim you were in a forbidden area?
None. No? See, this is very, you see what I'm saying?
Did he demand to see your papers?
No, he did not demand to see any paper, but it mm-hmm. ended, see, the reality is he ended up escorting us out of there,
what?
Out of the state park.
Wow.
In other words, it totally destroyed our...
So he scared you out,
day.
In essence.
He scared us out, in essence. And
did you get this guy's name?
No.
Well, maybe we should find out who's the Japanese-American on the Parks and Rec, and we should file a complaint.
Yeah, because
actually,
you see what I'm saying? I don't have to feel now that... Yeah, I mean, this was extremely unusual. I haven't talked to too many people about this except some.
We know Dan Hopkins is in the studio, and he tells me that he knows who you're talking about, so you might want to talk to him later. And you actually exchange information.
Yeah, I mean, this is so off the wall. I mean, what is this? I mean, I go in, a, you know, in the state park, and anybody can just like watch what people do, or they, or if a ranger comes by, just on an average, you know, just checking things out, they can go, hi, you know, how are you people doing today?
Right.
But this guy was
get out of the park, folks. Sounds like Mayor Jordan showed up
well,
in drag or something.
Let me just tell you, he was not, you know, extremely negative. Now, this is what I have to point out. There is other psychological forms that are used. You see, he definitely made us feel uncomfortable. This is what I'm saying. Do you see what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying. And I think our audience does, too. Let me acknowledge that and kind of move along.
It has
to this,
never happened again. This is all I can say. Now, the way it was, I want to sum it up. I was being made to feel like, hey, I don't belong in this
right.
park.
Well,
like, you don't belong here, what we're doing here, or what the hell we were doing. I mean, come on, what
right.
work
well,
are we doing?
You don't belong in the park, you don't belong downtown.
Yeah, it's
you don't,
strange, you know.
You don't belong in the homeless shelter, you don't belong, you know, only, where do you belong? That's the question. Somewhere else is the answer.
Right.
And I'm gonna move on to the
all
next
righty.
Thing, but I appreciate what you're saying.
Yeah, bye.
Bye-bye. Wow, well, there it is. Continuing this article in Street Spirit about San Francisco, is it still illegal to be homeless in San Francisco? An open letter to Mayor Willie Brown from Sister Bernie Galvin of the Steering Committee for Religious Witness with Homeless People. She's proposed, one, instruct the police to immediately stop citing, fining, and arresting homeless citizens for sleeping outdoors or covering themselves with a blanket in a park. More than 12,000 homeless people must compete for only 1,400 shelter beds in San Francisco, thus forcing thousands to sleep outdoors due to inadequate shelter. In December 1994, the U.S. Justice Department issued a legal brief declaring that it is a violation of the U.S. Constitution for the cities of San Francisco and Santa Ana to criminalize sleeping or camping where there is inadequate shelter for the homeless population. I think it's time we got the Justice Department to look into Santa Cruz. Maybe we can write them a letter tonight. Anybody want to volunteer? Give me a call at 423-HUFF. Two, police confiscation of the property of homeless people must cease. During the Jordan administration, the belongings which a homeless person's very lifeline to survival, which are that survival lifeline, were routinely confiscated by the police and discarded in the trash. A decent city must halt such practices and respect the property of homeless citizens. And as we heard from Keith McHenry on Friday, in an interview from San Francisco, this practice is continuing under Mayor Brown. It has not been discontinued. The reality is, workers going to the Coalition on Homelessness in the morning pass large garbage trucks that are compacting homeless property. Incredible. 3. And we have to pause here. Here's a phone call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Burn them!
Well, that's a little unintelligible, but maybe you could speak up more clearly next time. Police sweeps and bulldozer attacks on homeless encampments must be halted. Matrix employed military-style maneuvers designed to... Matrix employed military-style maneuvers designed to intimidate, instill fear, and dislocate homeless citizens. Middle-of-the-night police raids caused fear and trauma in the homeless community and reduced citizens to the status of exiles. It is time to let our fellow citizens come home again. Oh, by the way, we've received a second phone call from the unintelligible phoner. The message is, quote, burn down the mall. Well, I would say I don't share those sentiments, and it's difficult to do in the middle of the rain, and I would advise against it. But I would say burn weed on the mall and share that weed with other citizens, possibly even the very hosts who are wandering around arresting people for those kinds of activities. Maybe we can mellow them out. Again, continuing the open letter to Mayor Willie Brown, is it still illegal to be homeless in San Francisco? Another request by Sister Bernie Galvin. 4, the police must be retrained to respect the constitutional rights of homeless people. Without retraining, police habits of singling out homeless citizens for harassment will continue. Matrix was an official attitude of prejudice and hostility toward the homeless, an attitude which must be replaced by a new respect and tolerance. 5, the mandatory direct rent program must be eliminated in its entirety. Forcing GA recipients to live in welfare hotels is an infringement on individual liberty and an invitation to slum hotel owners to profit at the expense of the homeless community. This Jordan plan to sentence people to poor houses was part and parcel of the Matrix program to punish the poor. 6. City department heads and all city staff who serve the homeless population must agree with and honor the spirit of these new policies of justice and fairness. We agree with the Coalition on Homelessness that city staff who designed and implemented Jordan's Matrix program and the mandatory direct rent program must now be reevaluated. And again, we're listening to an open letter to Mayor Willie Brown. I'm reading it, that is. But we have a call here.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Oh, hello, Robert. This is Nicholas.
Nick Whitehead of SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Mr. Whitehead, what have you got to say for yourself?